All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
The Beach Bomb, Sean McCool.
Beach Bomb, yeah, I got the tank top on today, getting ready for that lifestyle. Practicing here at the beach.
So I got to give you some applause. How many years, what you're celebrating, this is your what anniversary?
27 years.
Yeah, man. 27 years. You deserve like a long round of applause for that.
Long round. Yeah, there we go.
That's awesome, yeah, man.
So we're finishing up the week at the beach here. I'm going to go do like a little dolphin cruise this evening.
Yeah.
As soon as this is over, and then head back to the old lockdown state.
You guys are back at it. You guys have been misbehaving, so you're back in detention.
Apparently, anyway, lucky for me, I'm working from home, so it doesn't affect me too much. But
yeah,
it's crazy. It's been refreshing here. Like I've seen 1% of the people here are wearing masks and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
Yeah. I have all these episodes as archives about back in the day when everybody was wearing masks.
Yeah. So. 3 months of drama over this, you know?
Yeah.
And we're back.
There's more to come, I'm sure. I got my beach gear on.
Yeah.
So, decided we'd drop in and do a quick episode.
Yep.
I know you got a couple things. I've got some stuff. So I did a training yesterday for somebody. So I'm not going to do the whole training because it was behind a paywall, but called it 6 top tier copy secrets.
Okay.
And, so we can go into those.
Yeah.
But, basically some of the teasers I used in that, and again, we won't go through all of them, but it's like the number one thing even seasoned copywriters forget, but pros never do. And the one that everybody liked the most, cause I actually asked them on the webinar, like which of the registration bullets they liked the best. And the one everybody liked the best, of course, was how to persuade so naturally that your ideal prospect is subconsciously forced to pull out their card and buy. Mm. So that was the winner of the bullets, of course. People just, they just want to go straight to the money.
Right.
So,
yeah, exactly.
So I had 4, like I thought, pretty good bullets. But what they didn't know is that it was the same answer to all 4 bullets. And that's what we'll talk about today.
Oh, okay.
It was the same answer to all 4 bullets. So yeah, I've got a different kind of drink today since I'm at the beach. Mm-hmm.
So something fruity.
It's a little fruitier. It is a little fruitier. I don't know if I'd call it fruit. It's more flavor.
Yeah. Right.
Than actual fruit. I was going through the old Publix cause we're in Florida. So everything's, mm-hmm. Publix grocery store.
Yep.
I've been a fan of Mike's, hard lemonade.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Stuff. Well, now they have a new one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Mike's harder. Right. So how much harder is this? Well, it's about twice as hard because this can that tastes like Fanta grape, basically.
Right.
Is 8% alcohol.
Wow.
Which is pretty stout for a beach drink.
Right.
So I've been sipping on these all week. Put them in the little Yeti mug and they had like a variety pack. So it was like black cherry, cranberry, lemonade, and strawberry. So strawberry's a little too sweet. Everything else is really good. Like just like perfect for the beach, because our heavy beers that we usually like just don't fit with the beach.
No, you've got to have something light, crisp, refreshing, and not too heavy.
Yeah. So
especially when you're out there showing off your, showing off the beach bod.
Yeah. Yeah. The dad bod. So yeah, I'm not as ripped as you are. So
hard. Okay. So harder. So, all right, let's see what is
harder.
So you don't have a glass, obviously you're drinking out of the can.
No, but it looks just like, it literally looks like,
looks like grape.
Fanta.
Oh, okay.
So Fanta grape, any of those things.
So we've been slacking the last couple of weeks, with PBR and Mike's Hard. So we're going to get some flack.
Yeah. That's all right. It's summertime. We're pulling out the summer.
That's right. That's right.
These definitely aren't microbrews, but it's still
something different, something unique.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like I said, it's great for, It's great for like a day on the lake or sure. day at the beach. That's what these are really good for.
Yeah.
Just don't leave them laying around because the kids will probably drink them and think they're like sippy cup.
I would be curious what their target, you know, from a demographic standpoint, who buys those the most? And my guess is it would be the younger 20 to 30, probably in that range.
Probably.
And majority probably. Would be female. Just
easy.
A slight majority.
I mean, this almost, but like just, these new cans yeah. that they have almost look more like energy drinks.
Yeah, they do.
So I wonder if they're going after the energy drink crowd.
Probably so. Know,
for the beach.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, it looks like a monster can or something.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. So what do you got?
All right. I have a.
Maybe you can redeem us.
I'll try. I'm not sure how this one. I do have a coffee. I have a coffee porter today from Mad nice. Tree.
Okay. I like that can.
I feel like this looks familiar because I picked this up at Total Wine last week. It's kind of
got what is the dark area of the can? What's the design?
It's a tree.
Okay.
Mad Tree.
So it kind of goes with your real tree camo then.
Yep. That's right.
You just stick in your pocket when you're going hunting. Oh, by the way, you'll appreciate this. So there's like a bridge coming out. We're in Navarre Beach, which is outside of Pensacola, but it's on a barrier island. And there's this little, when you go across the bridge, there's a section of land that people fish off of. Mm-hmm. And there's like three guys out there yesterday, bow fishing.
Oh, they're bow fishing.
I don't know what they were fishing for. I don't know what they were fishing for. Cause everybody else was like, you know, pole fishing there and they were using their bows and going after something. They were looking for something. I don't know. I didn't see them actually pull, but it just, you know, when you're driving by and you're used to seeing fishing poles and then some guy's standing there with a compound bow about to, it looks funny.
I wonder cause I know my sister-in-law's boyfriend, he and a bunch of buddies went down to the beach and they did the bow hunting for rays. For manta rays or sea rays. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Didn't even know you could do that.
I didn't know you could either. I'm like, is that really illegal? But apparently they were.
As long as it's not dolphins, I guess.
That's right.
So tell me how that one is. Oh, that's dark. That looks
nice
like
and
coffee.
Dark. So let me pull it up here. It's a local porter based. The local porter base was built as a platform to let coffee shine. The base beer brings like chocolate notes, very subtle roast, and enough sweetness from the lactose to balance everything out. 6% ABV. And let's see. Oh, this is interesting. After fermentation is complete, we split the batch into four small batches. This ensures that the base beer is 100% the same. The only difference is the coffee. So they use some different coffee blends for each one of these. So we've got four different coffee blends. So one is a CIN, Sin, Day, Clay, and C-Bus. Okay. So I don't know. We'll see. So with that said, let me pull up our beer sound here. Cheers.
Cheers. Nice. It's amazing how the glass and the can make that sound.
Still the same. Never changes.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Virtual dings.
That's a little different than what I expected.
So on a scale of 1 to 5 pints, you give it...
Let's see. Let me try this again. Maybe that first one wasn't that great.
Yeah. Let me take about 6 more sips. See if it's any good.
I tell you, I don't like the coffee on this. It tastes really? Kind of a burnt. I get like a burnt coffee flavor on it. So oof,
that's not good.
No.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's a bitter, you know, kind of a bitter burnt coffee taste on that first sip. Not a very good aftertaste either. So, Oh man.
So where does that leave you on a,
I'm going to have to go about a 1.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to have to go 1. We'll give it a 1.7. 1.7.
Oh, wow. That's rough.
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry, real tree.
So I'm going to give mine a solid 2.5. Mm-hmm. Like it's obviously not a beer. So, But for the occasion, refreshing.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the occasion, being on the beach, throwing in the Yeti with some ice, sipping on it for, you know, while you're out there.
For what it's meant for, it does
the job. In that regard, it's like a four.
Right.
But it's just as far as like every day, mm-hmm. like it's a 2.5, yeah. maybe a 2. So like it's, I would never buy this at home just to have around. I would only buy it for the lake or for the beach. That's the only time I would buy it.
Do you bring something a little stronger down, like the to have at night, like a little?
No, I left all that there. Just we had a pretty full car, so I didn't want to take anything extra. So
right. Well, you mentioned last week you had all this bourbon. You got
to get rid of it before. So, we'll start that program next week when we get home. So start the bourbon. What was that? The bourbon elimination plan. Yeah. So the BEP, because it's not going to travel in a container to Hawaii. Nope. I don't think very well. So
I don't think so.
But yeah, like that's our goal is to be in Hawaii for next anniversary. So 1 year from today. Be there.
That's awesome.
Celebrating. And be celebrating basically, I mean, our 50th birthdays. Mm-hmm. You know, it's 50th next year. So big year.
So again, we'll be persuasion by the pint/cup. I'll be having a beer. Sean will be, let's see. Let me think about this now.
It'll still be pints.
Yeah, that's right.
Early.
Yeah, just be an early pint.
It's an island. It doesn't matter, right?
That's right.
It'll be 5 o'clock your time. So 5 o'clock somewhere. Yeah, but it'll be like, so 4 year time would be like 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Hawaii time, yeah. About. So, yeah, so four to, depends on the time of year, five, because they don't do daylight saving. So it's either 5 or 6 hours, I think, is the difference.
Yep.
So. All right. Well, let's roll into some of these little secrets here.
You piqued my interest on this. I've got a few things on the back end that I'm going to share on phrases and words. And these are mostly not the written form. These are mostly used in communication, everyday communication for persuasion. Oh,
nice. So the reason I came up with this training is I've been doing a lot of website audits with the client I'm working with over ROI machines and doing some website audits, sales page audits for their membership site. Mm-hmm. And I keep seeing the same stuff over and over and over. And then it was time to do a training. So I was like, I'll do a training on this 6 top tier copy secrets. And, you know, basically what it is people are missing proof in their copy. So there's a lot of, and this is true of sales presentations. This is true of when you're just trying to make an argument, you know, to convince somebody to do whatever. Like there's a lot of times there's proof missing,
right?
But especially on sales pages, sales funnels, things like that, Facebook ads, presentations you're making to potential, you know, buyers. And most people know about testimonials, but what they don't realize is there's 5 other types of proof.
Yeah.
And we have talked about this once. I think you said you looked it up. It was like episode 9. So it's mm-hmm. been a
while.
It's been a few nights. I think most people have slept since then. A
few pints.
Yeah. A few pints since then. So it's always good to get a refresher on this kind of stuff. And this is, I just continue to see this as a big, big problem. So I thought we'd cover it. So they're basically 6 types of proof.
Okay.
And like I said, most people know of testimonials. So that's number 1, even though a lot of people don't do testimonials correctly.
Right.
But so we'll go with the other 5. And the first one that I talked about was scientific studies. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think, well, if I don't, you know, my product hasn't had a study about it, or my service hasn't had a study about it, or, you know, like it's scientific studies are not just for like supplements and drugs and
sure.
things like that. Like coaching could have a scientific study behind it, and they do. Mm-hmm. So how do you find scientific studies that match up with your sales page?
Yep.
And the answer is the same way you find out anything else in 2020. You go to Google and you type in your question.
Yep.
And basically if you put So what I would do is I would take, let's say you're doing coaching, for instance, just because that's easy and on top of my head.
Yep.
And I wanted to find some scientific facts around the benefits of coaching or not having coaching, whatever. So I would do like coaching benefits, and then I would do like a plus sign .edu.
Right.
And that would pull up like schools and things like that. Harvard would probably come up, some things like that. Or I would do coaching benefits plus like journal or study or something like that.
Sure.
So you, if you do journal, you're going to also get some like journaling stuff, mm-hmm. but you'll also get like medical journals.
Yep.
And other types of journals. And then you just start going through there and highlighting stuff, and you create another Word doc or a Google doc of some kind. You start copying links. And what you should do is, instead of writing first, do your research with, which we've talked about. We talked about last week with, you know, Bob Bly, you know, doing research and how important that is. If most people would just take even half a day and just set aside 4 to 5 hours to just do research on their own product and their own service.
Sure.
They would get 5 or 10 good pieces of proof using the different types I'm going to talk about that would really strengthen their letter.
Yeah.
And I did this live on the training yesterday, and like people were just blown away. They're like, I didn't even know there was proof for what I do. Like, cause they're thinking too much about their exact thing.
Right.
Whereas you can throw out a proof about what you do in general and then bring it back down to yourself.
Yeah. The proof doesn't have to be on your product itself. It could be something right. that supports your product or service.
Right.
I sent an email and got a new, like a podcasting sponsor for one of my industry podcasts. And that was last week. Yeah. One of the emails that I sent that really helped to solidify things, you know, not only did I show them like our download numbers and things like that, but here was the clincher is like, I did just researching articles on the effectiveness of podcast. And I sent them a link to an article from, I guess it was last year. No, it was like 2019 on CNBC. That says mm-hmm. the title, there's a new online ad format that doesn't annoy people. So, so in the article or in the email that I sent them, one of the statements that I said, and I pulled it up, it says, unlike other forms of digital advertising today where ad avoidance is increasing, most people approve of podcast sponsorship because listeners make the connection that the advertising funds the content that they're listening to. And I said, here's some proof. And I sent them an article to this CNBC, which covered it completely. You know, why people nice. Are kind of switching over to podcasting because, you know, they're not getting hit with ads other places. And they accept, even though there's sponsorship ads on podcasts, people are more accepting of that. They don't feel like they're getting interrupted because they realize right. the content that's helping to pay for the content they're listening to. So,
yeah. And I think most podcasters, they're more selective, I think, because it's, you can only have so many advertisements on a podcast right. mm-hmm. compared to a scroll on Facebook. So I do think podcasters are also just more critical of what they have on, what they'll allow yeah. to be the sponsorship
exactly.
because it is a more personal, mm-hmm. you know, thing. And by the way, using CNBC leads me into like one of the other secrets. Yep. And one of the other secrets is just an authoritative citation. Mm-hmm. You know, so this was great. Like yesterday on the training, I asked for like a volunteer from the webinar, and somebody gave like a quit smoking site. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I just typed in like quit smoking and like, and then I did like Scientific America thing. Actually, mm-hmm. this was for the scientific study. Cause I was like, surely there's something about smoking and Scientific America, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And sure enough, it came up with like a couple different things. Which one would I do for authoritative citation? I think I just typed somebody else had something about nutrition and autism or something like that.
Yeah.
Or anyway, I did like their topic and then I did like Forbes. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, there was a Forbes article that talked about that thing. Right. So then we were able to just pull that.
Yeah.
You know, Forbes says this.
Yeah. Cause a Forbes is very authoritative. Most people give right. anything that comes out of Forbes pretty, you know, they respect that.
Automatically people are going to, it's like name dropping. It's going to have some credence. Mm-hmm. I will say that you probably don't want to use that in like your headline or anything like that, because then you're borrowing, you're actually trade. It's, I think the phrase is called trading on someone else's credibility. Mm-hmm. So you can do it like in text, as like you were doing a press release or something else, but you don't want to make it like the focus of your headline.
Right.
So, you know, that's a way to use authoritative citation, just like you did. You know, CNBC says, you know, this is a non-annoying way to advertise.
Sure.
So that's a great example. And that's, I mean, and you said that's the one that like put it over the top for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they were, it was like, it kind of fulfilled the, what I was stating to them earlier in the previous that said, you know, you guys are investing in other forms of online advertising, and this is one of the ones that most listeners don't get annoyed with, you know, because most people are accepting of that. Whereas in other forms that you're putting money into, you're getting ad blocks, you know, so, and people aren't seeing that. So,
yeah. And the thing about this, you know, you have to have a strong promise, right? Yeah. When you're going to do your advertising or you're writing it, whenever you're pitching somebody, you need a strong promise. Mm-hmm. The problem is most people are doing strong promises and making all these claims without ever backing it up with any kind of proof. Mm-hmm. So then it just starts to fall flat because you're like, you're just saying, but you're, or like we say in sales, right? You're telling, but not showing.
Right. Exactly.
So when you start to use proof, you start showing instead of just telling.
Yep.
So another one is logical argument. So you can just use a very logical argument. We do this all the time in sales. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I have written on yellow pads with Sharpies.
Yep.
Where you know, like if I was trying to sell you on the value of installing, and well, you do this in your manufacturing sales all the time, when you just do the math for somebody and help mm-hmm. them see what your new process or your new material is going to save them over time. You know, it's like, you know, if you save 10 cents per unit and you're doing 20,000 units a day, mm-hmm. that's this times that many, you know, times 30 days a month, times 12 months a year. So that's just a logical argument where you could just say a claim would be, this is going to save you a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like so that's what? True, but it has no,
right. There's I no hear that all the time. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So if you can say, you know, based on our studies and walking around with you and doing some research, we're going to save you 10 cents per unit. And then you just do the math as far out as you want to do.
Sure.
To get that bigger number. And now you've got a logical argument. Mm-hmm. You know, you've saved them $250,000 a year.
Yeah.
And your consulting or whatever is going to be 20,000.
Yep.
Well, that's now a 10-to-1 return.
Absolutely.
For that or whatever. So that's just using a basic logical argument. And those are just, that's just being a little creative and just mm-hmm. slowing down enough to think about when you throw out a claim, how can I say that so that they really get it? And most people are so busy just like talking and typing and other stuff that they don't take the time to slow down and just use a logical argument like that.
Yep.
So then the other one is, and this seems obvious, but it's called a statement of fact.
Okay.
And this is a type of proof, right? So the example in the book, and by the way, all these come from the book Architecture of Persuasion.
Yeah.
By Michael Masterson. If anybody wants to pick that up, that's where a lot of these come from. And in the book, he gives an example when he's explaining some of these. He talks about like, let's say you were selling a vacuum cleaner and you wanted to say it was lightweight.
Yeah.
Well, saying it's lightweight is a claim. Mm-hmm. But there's no proof around that, right? So the way you would, one way that you could offer proof of that is a statement of fact. And a statement of fact might be it weighs 3.2 pounds.
Yeah.
Right? Or it weighs about as much as, you know, I don't know, something. That's actually the next tip. So we could say 3.2 pounds, which is like, and that's the next secret, is using an analogy or a metaphor.
Yep. So yeah, so lightweight, you just hit that's a key word for me when it comes to backpacking gear and stuff like that, camping stuff. So you want lightweight. And so everything advertises, you know, you buy a tent, lightweight tent, lightweight backpack. But the thing that I'm looking for is always the statement, which is actually, okay, what, you know, what's the weight? Okay. Cause you know, I want to know what that's compared to.
Yeah. So you could have the actual statement of fact, which would be, you know, this tent weighs 3.2 pounds.
Right.
And then you can intensify that, which we talked about intensification last week or the week before, right? So that you could intensify that with an analogy or metaphor.
Yep.
You know, you could say that's like, you know, a quart, about the same as a quart of water or a half a gallon of water.
Yep.
So now you kind of have a good idea, especially if you're a backpacker, you know,
right.
Yeah. About half a gallon of water weighs 4 pounds. Mm-hmm. So or less than a half a gallon of water.
Sure.
You know, or a liter of water or whatever. Whatever you're using. So now you've got a realistic comparison that you can use. And it's kind of an analogy, a metaphor to say it's like, I guess technically that would be what, a simile.
Yeah.
It's like, if you use the word like. So yeah, it's like, you know, 1 liter of water.
Yep. Because you're comparing and,
yeah,
you know, contrasting or comparing the two things. And so that helps to understand, give you a solid understanding what that relates to.
And your brain can actually process that. Mm-hmm. Like your brain has a hard time processing lightweight. Has a hard time processing, you know, depending on a lot of things, like your job. Like if you're a heavy equipment operator, lightweight is going to mean one thing to you.
Sure.
Than a guy who, you know, does, you know, something else, like makes jewelry, for instance, right? Those two people are going to have very different definitions of lightweight.
Yeah. Right.
Or, an atomic scientist is going to have a very different opinion of what lightweight is compared to a heavy machine operator.
Right.
So you got to keep that in mind, know your audience and know what makes sense.
Absolutely.
When you hear different words.
In composites, we do that a lot with, when we're comparing composite components, things that are made lightweight, but durable. So we do a comparison with, okay, you've got a car with this particular part that weighs this many pounds. You know, alternatively, you've got this composite part that's not steel that has the same strength, but it weighs, you know, so many pounds less than this, you know, steel part. So you're basically putting the image in their mind of, you know, how much that steel part weighs, that steel piece that you're replacing with a composite, say it weighs 50 pounds. And say, we've just replaced it with this composite part that weighs, guess what? 15 pounds. But guess what? Not only that, but you've retained the same strength as that piece that weighed 50 pounds.
Yeah. So your claim would be like, this is going to make the vehicle lighter and more fuel efficient, right?
Exactly.
So that you can hit, you know, government standards or whatever. But that still doesn't tell you any, that's still a claim without any proof.
Right.
So the next level of proof is a statement of fact. It's 10 pounds lighter, 15 pounds lighter, 10 times lighter, whatever the number is. And then you could, like we said, intensify it with an actual example. That's like, it's like eliminating, you know, two full size suitcases from the trunk on a fully loaded car, something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's all kinds of ways you can do that. And then the final one is just testimonials. And the biggest thing I see on testimonials, and you would think with everybody shopping on Amazon all the time that more people would do this.
Right.
But you know how Amazon has the little headline on the reviews and then it has the review?
Yeah.
Right. It's got the bold headline and then the review. And the bold is like a summary.
Sure.
You know, whatever it is. And I see hardly anybody doing that with their testimonials.
Yeah.
You know, only kind of advanced copywriters seem to be using it.
Yeah.
And yet it's staring you right in the face. You know, most people order on Amazon 2 or 3 times a week.
And my eyes always go to the bold headlines every time.
Exactly.
Just because you want that system one brain is primed to look for that quick.
Yep.
That quick answer. So.
And it keeps people, like if you see a block of testimonials, like it all kind of runs together. You just see these paragraphs of little quotes and you're not going to read them.
Right.
So you can do two things. One, you give them a little mini headline, and two, you can actually bold or italicize or underline inside the testimonial itself. But the easiest thing to do is just to put a mini headline above the testimonial, just like we do on reviews on Amazon.
I love that. Yeah, that's great.
So, and that's super easy to do. Even if it's an email copy, you know, if you're going to throw in a testimonial there, you know, just
Yeah. How often do you see? I really don't. Aside from Amazon, do you see those a lot? I don't see them a lot in copy.
I don't. And I keep telling my team, I'm like, I need to start doing this because it works. Yep. I mean, we did it. I've always done it in my stuff, but I don't know where I picked that up. I don't remember which book I picked it up in or which, you know, copywriting legend I read does that. But that's just always been second nature to me. But the more I study and the more I do audits and stuff, I just don't see it.
Have we gone through the book? I'm trying to remember. Have we gone through the book Impossible to Ignore?
I don't think so.
Okay, that's a book because that's one of the things where they, Carmen Simon, Impossible to Ignore. Okay, so I've read that one. It's been a while, but I've actually been going back through it this week. But it talks about the, you know, exactly what you're saying, making things impossible for your eyes. Because what do your eyes naturally do? They are going to, like, zero in right on that bold title right before your testimonial. Like,
I think Ogilvy on advertising, he always, the second most read thing is a caption under a picture.
Yeah.
So a lot of times you'll see testimonial pictures, right? Mm-hmm. The person or whatever. And then underneath you have this block of copy, but it's too long for people to just want to read it. So you can almost create the mini headline like a caption under the picture.
Right.
And then they can go deeper into it. But yeah, bolds, obviously you don't want to go crazy with bolds in your copy, but most people don't use enough bold in their copy.
Right.
And then of course your subheads, you know, should tell their own story. We've talked about that a bunch of times.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things that people overlook in testimonials. And it's just super easy to do. Just pull out the best phrase or summarize it and just put it on top.
That's great.
So you had a couple things from a book you're reading.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to get Phil Jones, the author. So I'm reaching out to him to see if he can join us. So I'm not going to go through this whole book because I would love to have him on. This is probably his most famous one, but the title is Exactly What to Say. So I've like dog-eared this thing so many times, but it's really one of these, it's like a quick book. It's not real thick, but it's very short chapters. And he does a great job, you know, speaking of, you know, bold headlines, like every chapter has got like this massive headline with a sub paragraph to it. That's also like, it's like, it goes like from H1 font down to H2 or H3, you know, so it's big and it stands out. So he knows exactly how to do this. But these are phrases, and most of these aren't for written copy for the most part. Actually, you could apply some of these to copywriting, but most of these
conversational.
Yeah, most of these are conversational and everyday communication.
So let me ask you this: were you like studying up on this while your wife was out of town? Like, did you feel like you'd been losing some conversations?
This is, I didn't have that intent, but it could be very useful.
That's good to know.
So here's a statement here. Okay. So I'm going to throw out a few just as an example, and hopefully we'll get Phil on the show. So obviously one of the most famous ones in here is imagine if, right? And we've talked about this before. Powerful statement, because when you use that phrase, what is the brain, and then you follow that with a picture that you paint for the individual. And you can't help but go there. So, and I don't like to use imagine if, what I'll use it, like if I'm in conversation with a, someone that I'm trying to kind of paint a picture for, if I'm trying to persuade, I'll say something like, not imagine if, but I like to say like, imagine for a few minutes, like, or, you know, just kind of in conversation, imagine just for a second, imagine, you know, something like that to make it easy. Not imagine if. To me, imagine if sounds really awkward to say. But just like, imagine for a few minutes, blah, blah, blah. So,
right.
But,
and that one, I mean, that one we do use a lot in copy, or at least I do.
Yeah.
You know, So yeah, that's a really powerful, and I think that's a pretty common NLP phrase as well.
Like, yeah.
I know it's also the Dan Sullivan question, right? It's the start of the Dan Sullivan question. If imagine we were working together. Mm-hmm. Imagine it's 3 years from now, we've been working together.
Right.
What would it take for you to be happy? And like, so then they have to figure, then they have to like process very quickly everything that needs to happen between mm-hmm. now and 3 years from now.
Yep.
And then they spit out an answer. And now you know exactly what you need to do.
Right.
To have them as a happy client.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really powerful question. We'll have to get the exact wording on that. But if you just look up Dan Sullivan question online, you can find it for sure. It's a really good question.
So I remember like this question or the use of this, one of the biggest things I ever, you know, when I first bought life insurance, I remember the sales guy that first sold me when I first had, I had a second born on the way, didn't have any life insurance. This was many, many years back. And I went, it was a Prudential guy and I met with him. Still remember the guy's name. He's retired now, but but he used the imagine, I want you to imagine. And he painted this picture, you know, what would happen? Because it was early on in my sales career. And he painted a picture for me to imagine what it would be like if something were to happen to me and my family is just completely not provided for. So it was like, use that, and it was very effective because
that's a good salesperson there to be willing to, like, a lot of people just think of like imagine for the positive.
Yep. No, he used fear.
It's absolutely really powerful on the other side as well,
right?
You know, to use that fear and that kind of worst case scenario, imagine mm-hmm. you know, whatever. Yeah, so that's a great reminder, because I tend to use it more in the positive sense.
Yeah. So well, it's used in, I mean, look at politics right now. Imagine if such and such party wins, mm-hmm. what's going to happen? And it's being played out on both sides. So we're not giving credence to either one, but imagine this side wins in November or this side wins in November. What's going to happen? Well, for one party, they're saying it's going to be total anarchy.
Imagine this, if candidate X wins, the world's going to look like this. Right.
Yeah.
Very powerful. Very powerful. What else you got in there?
Okay. Here's another. Open-minded. So most people are not going to say, Sean, if I ask you a question, are you open-minded?
Of course.
Most people don't say, no, I'm not very open-minded.
Yeah.
So it says, if you were to ask a room of 1,000 people whether they considered themselves open-minded, I'm sure 900 of them would raise their hands, you know? So mm-hmm. most people don't want to be, you know, the last thing you want to be is like framed as someone who is not open-minded. Here's some examples you can use in conversation. And these are just persuasive ways that you can get people to, like, say, for instance, you're having a dialogue with somebody, which is, you know, very difficult this day and age, but you know, you're having a conversation, you're trying to get, or you're trying to persuade someone to your side. Mm-hmm. And so you have to say, you know, one of the things you can say is, let's see, would you be open-minded about giving this a chance? Here's another one. How open-minded are you about increasing your monthly income, John?
Hmm.
Well, most people aren't going to say, I'm not open-minded to increasing my monthly income. So it kind of puts you in a position to kind of say, to start questioning yourself, to say, do I want to be looked at as open-minded? So you're automatically, it puts you in a position where you kind of have to start thinking to yourself, okay, am I closed-minded for not looking at this more closely?
Yeah. So it forces a different part of your brain to process it.
Right.
My buddy RC, who we've had on the show, you know, he's really good at sales. And one of the things he talks about is like, when you get down to that final, when you're about to lay the price on somebody, you know, you've kind of gone over the outcomes and the terms and things like that, but you haven't like said the price yet.
Right.
So it's like, you know, your kind of your ending statement is, would X number of dollars,
mm-hmm.
be an appropriate amount to invest if you believe what we'll do together would work.
Right.
Well, the word appropriate is like a very like clear type of word. And, mm-hmm. and the opposite of it is inappropriate.
Yep.
And inappropriate tends to be like, you know, deviant type stuff mm-hmm. that people think of.
Right.
So automatically the brain's like, well, it's not inappropriate, right? Because it's not that kind of
right.
thing. So it just gets people to kind of agree with it. Mm-hmm. Assuming you've done all the work ahead of that statement correctly.
Right.
Then they'll be like, well, no, it's not inappropriate. And what they always say is like, well, yeah, if it'll work. And it's yeah. like, yeah, of course, if it'll work. Mm-hmm. So would, you know, $10,000 be an appropriate amount to invest? And they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you say fair, people could argue it. If you say, so the choice of words, if you said affordable, mm-hmm. like people could easily shoot that one down, but appropriate versus inappropriate, it's a lot harder to shoot down.
Right.
And that's kind of the same thing. Open-minded is like mm-hmm. the opposite of that is closed-minded. I don't want to be closed-minded. So,
right. So the way you framed it is kind of put them in a situation. It says, when introducing a new idea, start with how open-minded are you? Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a difficult question to really avoid. You know, I'm not closed-minded, so I'm pretty yeah, open-minded. So
it's like, oh, no, I'm, you know, even if they went with like 75%, they gotta right. be like, so now their brain, if we think about what the brain is doing, the brain is now like, okay, yeah, I'm pretty open-minded. So sure. now you've kind of done the old Forer effect,
right?
The you know, the Barnum statement where you've gotten people to admit to themselves that they're open-minded.
Exactly.
And now this new idea has a little bit more space to get in
sure.
than it did before that statement. Yep.
Exactly.
That's cool. I like so, that one.
This will naturally attract people toward the very thing that you'd like them to support. Everybody wants to be open-minded. No one wants yep. to be closed-minded. No one wants to be thought of closed-minded. They might not care whether they're open-minded or not, but they don't want to be thought of being closed-minded. Exactly. All right, last one. I'm going to hit one more. And this was really powerful, and I can name off time and time again where I've used this, especially in sales. And this one is one that you can use in verbal communication, or it works in written communication too, but it's typically not sales copy. I would think of it more as like from just an email or a text or something like that. Okay. Can you do me a favor, Sean? A favor.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So that's a very powerful thing. Most people wouldn't think of that. Like, oh, wait, I got to do asking somebody a favor is a powerful thing. And yes,
it's funny you say that. Like I used that in an email sequence last week.
Did you really?
I was okay. writing for a client. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, but yeah, it's powerful. Like, yeah. 'Cause we've been trained, you know, to be nice to people for the most part,
yeah.
right? If somebody needs a favor, you're supposed to say yes. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the social etiquette. If nothing else, it forces people. Plus, it's a question, so the brain likes to answer questions.
Right.
Either way, so it would take a very strong person to say no to that.
Yeah.
Like somebody who's very aware, things like that. But for most people are going to at least, again, it's going to open the mind just a little bit, get that crack enough to get to the next sentence of the copy or the next sentence of the presentation. So you can at least get your point across.
Yeah. And I would add one more thing, which he doesn't in the book, but one more thing that makes it even more powerful. If you add, can you do me a favor, Sean, is if you give a reason for that favor. Mm. You know, you go back to the psychology of persuasion, influence of psychology, you know, Cialdini's old book, where he said, you know, he talks about the reason, giving a reason, like your odds of getting something done or getting a favor met increase when you justify it with a reason. Like,
and it doesn't have to be a good reason.
No. No, it really doesn't.
So literally you could say, could you do me a favor, Jonathan, because yeah. I need one.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because I think that was the study, right? Somebody was doing copies at right. the copy machine. Mm-hmm. They're like, can I break in line? People are like, yeah. no. But if they said, you know, can I break in line because I need to make copies?
That's right.
They were like, sure.
Sure. Sure, that makes sense. Standing, I mean, that's not really a good reason, you know, but
I know it's a ridiculous reason actually, because everybody is standing in line to make copies.
Right.
By the way, making copies is this thing that you used to do back in the day for our younger listeners. Yeah,
people are like, what? Copies? What's that?
Yeah.
So he says here, I'll just read the quick summary. Success in life and business is rarely achieved without the support of others. So if you can do things that allow other people to help you achieve your goals, then the chances of you reaching them significantly increase.
Well, you know, in some cultures, have you read the book? It's Rabbi Daniel Lapin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
About money.
Mm-hmm. Thou Shalt Prosper, or is it?
Yeah, Thou Shalt Prosper.
Yep.
He talks about that in that book where, you know, like the Jewish culture is like they build their business relationships on trying to constantly one up.
Absolutely.
Favors.
Yep.
So that somebody always owes them a favor and they always owe somebody a favor.
Yeah.
And it just kind of,
it's
not in like in a cruel way. It's like, that's just how they do it.
That's right.
Like that's just, it's kind of expected.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you know that, then like, you know, some cultures are like that. Mm-hmm. So to know that is good also.
Yeah.
That you can put that culture, that expectation out there. Hey, you do me a favor and I'll owe you a favor.
Right.
Right. Cause that's kind of, and I think you do need to be aware of that. Like if you're going to use that line, know that you may down the road, somebody may ask you for a return.
Absolutely. Favor. Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's got to be some reciprocity in there a little bit that you've showed in the past, but I certainly think that if you've showed that in the past, you can certainly, and I always like to frame it is, I don't even like to say favor. I like to say, and usually it's something really brief or quick. So if I email a client and I need some feedback on them or get them to, I'm asking them to do something for me real quick. And in fact, this happened just last week. I needed some feedback on a product trial that a client had tested in their lab. And I'd not heard anything. And I just said, I reached out to one of my contacts and just said, can you do me a quick favor? And I like to use quick because it underscores the fact that it's not going to, you know, cost them a whole lot of time or effort. So
it's not going to inconvenience them.
Right. And I got a reply, you know, and I think that if I had left off the favor and said, send me this when you get a chance, if you would, I don't think it would have had the same effect.
Because even if you said, can you check on this for me?
Right.
Because right now it's like, I think part of the reason the favor works is because you as the sender of the message is acknowledging that it's not just a normal thing. Like you're acknowledging that it's going to require some effort on their part.
Right.
Where if I just say, could you check on this for me?
Yeah.
It's kind of a little bit of,
it's like you're demanding
that you have time to do that and that you're just doing stuff for me, right? But if I at least admit that it's a favor, you know, it shows awareness on my part. It shows that I understand it's going to take you time to do this. Mm-hmm. So I think that all gets processed very quickly by the other person. And they're like, oh, okay, well, at least he knows this is going to take me some time.
Absolutely.
Even if it's quick. Like, so I'm willing to do it.
And for all you parents who have teenagers, I got to say, this is an amazing persuasion technique if you have teenagers to say, can you do me a quick favor and wash the dishes or, you know, do this? Because I find it works so much better than just telling them, hey, take out the trash. Yeah. Every time I go in and tell my oldest, can you do me a favor? Can you run and take out the trash real quick? Boom. Never have any problems. So,
And part of that is tone too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. It is.
Especially in verbal communication, like how you do that. Yeah. But as opposed to walking in the room is like
demanding. Yeah.
What's up? You forgot to take out the trash again? We do this every week.
Yeah. And then it just goes downhill from there.
It goes downhill very fast. even though you know that you're asking for a favor the same time every week.
Exactly. Yep.
Those are great tips, and I'd love to have Phil on and hear more about the rest of those if we can get him on for sure. Anybody else out there that's got a book and wants to talk about it on the old Persuasion by the Pint podcast. Man, we were going to do a quickie, and this is already at 51 minutes.
That's I know. So much for that.
Yeah. But it's just like the good old days of sitting at casual pint. Just keeps on going.
That's right. But I know you got plans tonight, so I'm going to let you go, and we'll wrap up. You got anniversary. Are you guys heading back tomorrow or Sunday?
Yeah, tomorrow morning. Okay. Tomorrow morning. Yeah, check out. Very cool. You know, it's usually Saturday to Saturday at these places. So.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah, so we're heading back in the morning. It's a long drive, but yeah, it was a nice week.
Good 9
week.
Hours?
A little over 10.
10, so, okay.
Yeah. So it's, but these beaches are so much nicer than like the South Texas beaches. So sure. It's worth the drive for sure. And nothing like these panhandle beaches up here. Just the white sand, sugar white sand. It's just super nice.
Very nice.
So I guess we'll call that a wrap. I think you're done.
Empty. Me too. I'm done. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. As always, you can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com or any of your podcast platforms. Thanks for listening, Sean. Hope you guys have a safe trip tomorrow, and we'll see you all next week.
See ya.